can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it. Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Your home is important. That's why Geico helps make it easy to save on condo insurance. Because home is more than just a place. Home is where you took minimalism too far because there's only one chair in your entire condo and your only entertainment is one card. Not even a deck of cards, but a single card. And all your guests have to share one plate and one fork, but you're convinced that less stuff means more freedom. The Geico Insurance Agency could help protect the overly minimalist broom closet you call home. Call Geico and see how easy it is to switch and save on condo insurance.
This is Solid Snake, and you're listening to This Week in Geek with Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of geeks. Games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of geeks. This Week in Geek. This Week in Geek.
Hey guys, what's going on? This is Mike the Birdman Dodd, and you are joined here on This Week in Geek. And I am joined with my intrepid co-host, the awesome, the powerful, the lover, and the fighter.
David Double D Dennis. That was quite the introduction.
It was. I decided to jazz things up because you know what? We have a very special interview here at This Week in Geek. Now, we spoke to this guy a couple of months ago. We talked about all things Solid Snake, X-Men 2, and we kind of hinted at this upcoming project he's dealing with. And I'm talking about David Hayter. That's right, the guy who does the voice of Solid Snake, but more importantly, is the writer of the Watchmen movie, which is coming out on March 6th, which is pretty much all we've been talking about here in the studio for about the last 2 to 3 weeks.
I'm very excited about this. Looking forward to everything that's going on with it, so...
It's quite cool. I actually picked up the book Watchmen and Philosophy the other day, which we'll have an interview about that later on. But so we want to welcome David Hayter to the show. Dave, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be back on This Week in Geek.
It's just so awesome we get to talk to you again, and especially about Watchmen, because this is a project, I'll be honest with you, I never thought would actually happen. I didn't think this comic was adaptable to the screen.
Yeah, well, had you been there for the 7 years I worked on it, you that would have changed your opinion, not at all. We didn't think it was going to happen either at many points along the road, but fortunately, Zack Snyder was born a few decades ago, and that saved everything.
Cool. Well, I guess I'll start things off with a question. Mm-hmm. What was the most difficult part of the book to adapt to the script?
You know that my I get this a lot, and my answer is not terribly satisfying unless you're interested in screenwriting. But I didn't really have a difficult time adapting the story to the screen. It to me it was always an amazing movie that was already storyboarded, and I really looked at it as the fans have always looked at it, which is why can't we just take it right out of the book and put it up on the screen? So you know, to translate it into film language was not terribly difficult. What was difficult were the four subsequent studios and the endless attempts to develop it into something that it never was. And so, myself and Alex C., the other screenwriter, you know, have said again and again, it was really more about sort of protecting this delicate Fabergé egg of a story and not letting it get cracked or broken or mangled into some unrecognizable form.
So when you were developing the project and like you were working through it, how many drafts did this project eventually go through before we got to the final one that was filmed?
Well, I did 8 official drafts, you know, with many other producer drafts in the middle of that. And then Alex came in and he did a draft and, you know, I don't know how much, Zach and Alex did, after I stepped aside right when it went to Warner Brothers. So I don't know how many more drafts they did, but they, you know, they, for example, retrofitted it back to 1985, put Richard Nixon back in as president, you know, all these things that I, you know, sort of minor details that I had conceded to the studios along the way that because of the success of 300, Zach was able to put back in. So I don't know. For myself, it was 8 major drafts.
Now, how did you attempt to modernize the Watchmen into today's setting in your original script? And were you upset at all that they chose to keep it in the 1985 setting?
No, I thought that was great. You know, you have to keep in mind when I was working on the film, I pitched it before 9/11. I apparently signed my contract on September 10th. 2001, my first contract on it. So, you know, as I was working on it, the world was going through quite an upheaval, and the studios felt, and I agreed, that the audience's mind was so much on the events of the day that it might be helpful to bring it up to modern day. And I, you know, I sort of did it in a way that I moved Hollis Mason up from the 30s and 40s to the 50s and 60s, but I tried to do it in a way that retained Vietnam and retained all the things that, you know, the touchstones that really made the book so remarkable. But when I heard that Zach was going back to 1985 and that Warner Brothers was going to let him do it, I was thrilled. You know, I had always intended to bring the movie to the screen very, very close to the original book, and fortunately with Zach, you know, they were able to get even closer. So it sort of went beyond my wildest dreams. I'm upset about nothing they did in this movie.
When you were working with Zach, how much input did like he have when you were writing some of the characters for like his thing? Like was there any character that you felt you got absolutely bang on, this is something you're super proud of?
Well, yeah, there's a few things. I never worked directly with Zach. I mean, I went up while they were shooting, but I wasn't really working in an official capacity at that point. For myself, there were a few, like I say, I was really, really just going from Alan Moore's brilliant story, and his characters were so remarkably well developed that there wasn't much I felt that I needed to do. I didn't want to really put my stamp on it. You know, out of some writer's ego, I just wanted to share the Watchmen experience with the wider world, you know, as a true comic book fan. But there were a couple of things. I did a nice little speech for the comedian where he basically summed up the course of human history, which is, it goes something like, you know, we've been trying to kill each other for, you know, centuries, but the minute we, attain nuclear technology, well, it all just became a matter of time. So it was that, you know, those sorts of things to sort of really define what the world was like in 1985, which I think, you know, your younger listeners may not know that, you know, when I was 15, we all felt like the nuclear missiles could fly at any minute. You know, they'd say you'd have half an hour's warning before the entire world would come to an end. And it was a pretty terrifying time. And so I'm really thrilled that concept has come back, and I'm thrilled that I got to play a small role in sort of focusing their attention back on that fact.
Something I would like to know, David, have you seen the finished version of the film, and what was your response to it?
I saw, they invited me to, I'm actually going to see the finished version next week. I saw a rough cut a few months ago, and I came home just absolutely giddy with excitement. I was just so swept up in it and so amazed by what Zach and Alex and everybody and the cast has done that I called a friend of mine who is also an entertainment reporter in Toronto, and I said, look, you can't tell anybody any of the stuff I'm about to tell you, and then I told him everything. And it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome, and I say that as a hardcore fan.
How much of your original script could you see in the movie?
Well, quite a bit. It's, you know, my scripts were always really, you know, taken as close to verbatim from the book as possible. So, you know, the movie is very much like that. There are some elements that I didn't have in it. For example, Zach's opening credit sequence is astounding. And, there were things that they definitely put in. But there was, you know, but there are also, like I say, there's a comedian's speech. There's a speech by Hollis Mason. There's a very pivotal line by Rorschach. You know, some things that I did make up that were in the film that have remained there. So but I knew it would be very close to what I had been working on all that time if it was done by a true fan, which it was.
Now, one of the things I've always wondered, now I know there's a lot of special features that are going to be tied into this release, such as the Tales of the Black Freighter and Under the Hood. Were you involved with those projects in any way?
No, I wasn't. The Tales from the Black Freighter was the one thing I removed from the beginning, and I think everybody agreed that with it, I mean, it was painful to take it out because I love it so much, but with it, you know, you're talking about a 3-hour-long movie, but the producers and I had always discussed the idea of releasing Tales from the Black Freighter as a separate entity and then cutting it all together into the full director's cut of Watchmen. So hopefully that's the way it's going to go. But I never got a chance to work on Tales from the Black Freighter, but I am working with the effects company here that did it. So I have managed to see all of their boards and sketches and drawings, and it's pretty awesome.
Did you ever get to meet with Alan Moore or Dave Gibbons to discuss the script, and what was their response?
I talked to Alan Moore a couple of times. I called him when I first got the job and spoke to him a few times while writing the initial drafts, you know, just to make sure I got all the details right. And I called him once to ask what a Gluino was, and he was thrilled, and, you know, what the bestiary was. And he said, oh, David, you know, the Gluino is a particle that has since been discovered, and the bestiary is where you place these particles. And he seemed pretty thrilled that I was getting into that level of detail, and he was extremely supportive of me and the work I was doing, though he has a great antipathy for the movie business and adaptations of his films. He was very kind to me as a writer, as an artist, and said, you know, basically, he said, look, you know, my Watchmen was the book and your Watchmen is the movie, and you know, if I can give you any advice, that's what I'll do. And that's what he did. And then he did a very pivotal interview with Empire Magazine where he said that my script was probably the closest it would ever come to being adapted properly, which gave me a lot of credibility with the fans and really gave a great boost to the project. As far as Dave Gibbons, I met him in London when I was working on the Paul Greengrass version of Watchmen. I was there for about 6 months and got to meet Dave, and he's just the loveliest guy. He was so supportive of the whole thing. I watched the rough cut with him, and, you know, both he and I were blown away and very, very excited about the project. So that's been really nice. But Alan, you know, I still claims he's never going to see it, and that's fine.
I one thing that I've always wanted to know, David, is when you were writing this, when you were adapting some of the characters, more specifically, what was it like to adapt their personal philosophies. I've just been reading the book, The Watchmen and Philosophy, and I'm looking at how disconnected Dr. Manhattan is from everybody. How did you write that, to write someone who's effectively a god among men? Like, how did that translate?
Well, Dr. Manhattan is, you know, one of my favorite personalities to delve into, because he is basically a god who, you know, he's a man, or he used to be a man, and now he's becoming a god. But what really makes him fascinating are the little details that indicate that his ego is still that of a man. You know, I always looked at Dr. Manhattan as having sort of rock star syndrome, you know, where you are built up so high that you can't connect with humanity anymore, and yet your ego is so self-obsessed that you can't really function properly. And there are a couple of key elements key lines to Dr. Manhattan that I think really illustrate that, when he's fighting with Janie Slater, his first girlfriend, and she says, yeah, you're leaving me because I'm getting wrinkly and my breasts are sagging and you're still goddamn 30. And he says in his mind, it's true, she's aging more noticeably every day. So basically what you've got is a guy with the intellect and the powers of a god, but he's still concerned about the relative hotness of his girlfriend. And I think that's pretty fascinating and sad and wonderful all at the same time. You know, it's really Dr. Manhattan. His big journey is that he may let the entire world die because his girlfriend is sleeping with another man. And that's just literary gold as far as I'm concerned.
Who would you say was your favorite character overall to write for?
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, this is pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You shouldn't go to Barnes & Noble and buy 10,000 books just so you can build a book fortress and yell out, I am your book leader. You shouldn't buy 147 copies of War and Peace, stuff them inside turkeys, and serve them at Thanksgiving as turbookins. And you definitely shouldn't buy up all the copies of Dork Diaries, causing the neighborhood kids to stage a protest in your front yard. But you could, because at the Barnes & Noble Book Haul, you can get over 1,000 titles for 50% off. Stock up at your local Barnes & Noble. Turbookins are fictitious and should not be cooked at home.
Well, I think Rorschach is the sexiest, you know, in terms of characters to bring to life. He's just so twisted and amazing, and his moral code, you know, a great character needs a very solid moral code, and it doesn't have to be our moral code, but his is really great, you know, sort of taking the Batman moral code to its nth degree. Here's a guy who is not only willing to beat up criminals and bring them to justice, but, you know, he'll break your arm over illegal cancer medication, or he'll drop you down an elevator shaft just for, on sidewalk harassment. And so I think he's the most fun. Plus, his syntax is so broken and wonderful and creepy. You know, you're doing a combination of Batman and some psychopath from I don't know, another regions of hell.
Definitely. With like Warshak's character, how do you think he'll stack up in terms of seeing other great comic book characters brought? Like you said, you were just comparing him to Batman. Do you think Warshak will be the character that people will want to be at like Halloween this year, just because he has such a profound background and the fact that he is such a character that is everybody and nobody at the same time?
Yes. Well, not only that, but his mask is so cool that I think that will be a big hit at Halloween. In fact, I already have a Watchman mask a Rorschach mask from my various years doing the film. And I think it also comes down to, you know, he's this frightening enigma through most of the film, and then you hear his backstory, and it's so sympathetic that I mean, that's just one of the most beautifully rendered characters in the history of comic books. So, yeah, I think that will be a big hit. It's always freeing for an audience to see a character that is so unbound by the rules of humanity. That's why Wolverine is so popular, and that's why Rorschach's going to be so popular.
I have a question here. I was kind of afraid to ask it, but I guess I got to bring it out.
I can't reach you from there.
Oh, okay.
If I get upset by the question, I suppose I go to Niagara Falls and give you a good shaking, but don't be afraid.
Okay. How do you feel about the whole WB and Fox dispute over the movie, and were you involved with this at all?
I can't believe you brought that up.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
This interview's over. No, I'm just kidding. How do I feel about it? I think Fox is a horrible place where people don't really want to work anymore, and that's why their great filmmakers have left them. And I think they glommed on to a piece of material that they had turned down the opportunity to make on several different occasions, only when it looked like it was going to be profitable. Now, they may have legally won that right to interfere and take some of that money out of the hands of the studio that did get behind the film, and perhaps that was their they had a legal opportunity to do so, but I think it was a pretty twisted and ugly thing to do, and I think it was done in a very disingenuous fashion. And I just think they're not a great company.
Wow, I was really surprised to hear that, actually. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was something we always kind of knew would get settled, mm-hmm. but it was just a matter of money. And you're right.
I didn't. I know these people, and I actually refused to work for Fox after X-Men 2, and have not looked back since. And I part of me believed that they were going to literally shut down the whole film and try to make it again on their own, just to, you know, screw over Warner Brothers and to completely take over the project. Had it gone that way, I would not have been particularly surprised. But I was relying on the fact that Time Warner has a pretty significant legal department on their own. So fortunately, it got worked out.
Wow, that's the dark side of Hollywood. I never quite knew existed like that, actually.
Oh, yeah. It's dark. There's a lot of things you guys don't hear about, and which I probably shouldn't be talking about, but I got a big mouth.
That's okay. I think we all hate Fox in this room.
Yeah.
It's the one thing we can all agree on.
Bad news. It's not like they can't make good movies. They just, their process precludes it.
And everything they produce is PG-13 for some reason. But anyways, moving on. Mm-hmm. Do you still plan on directing one day? And what projects do you have coming up in the future?
Yeah, I am actually starting a company right now with an executive who used to work at Screen Gems. And the goal is to direct some film. I actually am working on a film. Excuse me. I just got back from Romania and Transylvania.
Wow.
Where I was doing some location scouting. So, but I don't want to say what it is yet, because I've done that a number of times and then the movie doesn't happen. And, you know, like Black Widow, which got killed. We had it all set up and ready to go, and then Aeon Flux came out and didn't perform well, and then we were dead. So I can't really say what it is, but I between the company and myself, we have a very cool slate of films for me to either produce or direct, and one of them in particular is a major comic book title, and which I can't tell you what it is yet.
Well, I think the fact that you were in Transylvania is a pretty big hint.
That's pretty cool.
Not really. I'm not looking to shoot Transylvania for Transylvania.
So it's not vampires or anything?
No. No.
Wow, that's still pretty cool. Now,
although half of our crew did get taken off by vampires, but the beauty of Romania is there's so many crew members that we just replaced them, so that worked out all right.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So I also read, David, you were working on another video game adaptation, and that's of Lost Planet Extreme Conditions. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Avi Arad, who you know used to own Marvel and is a good friend of mine, he brought me in, and this is the beauty of my job. He sent me a copy of Lost Planet to play, and I checked it out, and I just thought the world was really beautifully rendered, and you know, full of really cool elements, and the story. The story is a little convoluted in the game, and it will certainly be much, much clearer in the movie, but it essentially revolves around dwindling energy resources for the Earth and the fact that this planet, EDN-3, will, you know, represent a huge wealth of energy. Unfortunately, it's covered in massive, you know, prehistoric insects, and so that makes it difficult. But I thought the themes of energy depletion and the survival of the Earth by branching out into new worlds was very applicable to our situation today. So I thought, you know, that gives it a real theme for people to grab onto. And I just thought the world was beautiful. These colonized cities on this frozen planet, you know, American style cities that have, you know, crumbled over the years and are left there in the snow and the glaciers. I thought, you know, we could really make something very beautiful and cool out of this. So that's why I took it on, and I'm actually just handing in the second draft on Tuesday.
Cool.
Sweet. Yeah. One final question for me, I guess, and I like to ask this to the screenwriters I talk to. Do you have any tips and advice for young aspiring screenwriters like myself?
Read and write, you know, read books on screenwriting, but just read books and books and books and books, because reading and writing are sort of the same headspace, and the more you read, the more you will be able to sort of translate that into action. I would also, write and write and write and write. Like don't write one film and then think, okay, that's it, that's my masterpiece. You know, a lot of people write one draft and they get to page 120 and they say, okay, that's it. You know, if this doesn't sell, I'm going to kill myself. And because that's an impractical plan. You know, what you have to do is you write one draft or you write one script and then you take it out and everybody says, oh, that's horrible. And then so you say, oh, well, that's really heartbreaking. So you write another one and you take that out and everybody says, oh, that's horrible. And that breaks your heart again. But if you can write that third script, well, by then you really started to break some of the difficulties, started to learn some of the rules, and so you take your third script out and people go, oh, this is interesting, and then somebody picks it up and then everybody comes to you and says, what else do you have? And you say, well, I have these other two scripts, and then you rewrite them with that experience and you get going. So basically what I'm saying is it's a long process. You have to be committed, but if you are, you know, the more you do it, the better you get, and the more likely you are to make a living at it.
Well, awesome. Well, definitely, thank you for sharing that. I think,
yeah, definitely.
I think Dave's probably going to go off the air and probably start writing as soon as we hang up the phone.
Go, yeah. Go. Why are you writing?
I actually just finished writing my first screenplay of my entire life, pretty much, and now I'm just going through and doing like a rewrite. So. I definitely want to go home after this and work on it some more.
Well, there you go.
When I was in Romania, an aspiring writer asked me in Romanian fashion, you know, she said, what is the most important story to write? And sorry, I'm saying goodbye to my dry cleaner. She said, what's the most important story to write? And I said, well, you know, the story of your life, the story, however that manifests itself. The lessons that you've learned, the singular experiences that you've had, if you can translate those into an interesting story that might give an audience a better perspective on life, or maybe a different perspective on life, well, that's worthwhile, and that's where you should draw those experiences. And like I say, it doesn't have to be a straight retelling of your experiences. It can be put into metaphor. You can write your own life into X-Men, which is sort of what I did, and I mean they're all sort of experiences from my life, just covered with the trappings of genre film. So that would be my advice to you and to the rest of those aspiring scribes out there.
Well, awesome, David. Definitely thank you for sharing that with us. I definitely want you to hold on line for a minute while we grab a couple of promos. So if you want to see David's new movie, that'll be in theaters March 6th, right, Double D?
Yep, as far as I know.
So,
March 6th, the day I'm looking forward to this year.
So, David, if people want to find out more about you, where would they have to go?
Well, there's DavidHater.com. I think it's David-Hater.com, which is my official site, or IMDb. I occasionally respond to fans on the message boards there under the name Uber Dave. So if you see that, that's actually me. And other than that, you can look at watchmanmovie.com or I don't know. There's been more printed about me than I'm entirely comfortable with. So there's all sorts of things out there.
Well, definitely. Thank you once again for spending time with us today. We definitely appreciate it. So for This Week in Geek. So for This Week in Geek, we have been
David Double D Dennis.
And I've been, of course, been Mike the Birdman Dodd, saying live free or die hard. And we will be back next week right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
Capitalism! Freaking capitalism!
Where's our cut?
The Birdman has lost his mind. Stay tuned next week when he evidently doesn't find it again.
See, the moose are extinct. We shot the last one. That's all urban legend.
Stay tuned next week for Electric Boogaloo. Coming up next.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week when you hear Mike say,
and don't forget to spay or neuter your pet, noob.
So make sure to tune in next week on 90.1 FM, The Heat, Niagara's new rock. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content, as well as subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment about this week's episode, head to our forums at thisweekingeek.net/forums. We'll see you next week, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations. Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.